Welcome. I've asked Scott Eblen to talk with us today. The topic is mindfulness in the workplace. It's getting a lot of attention these days. A number of Fortune 500 companies, such as Google, AOL, Apple, Aetna, are offering meditation and mindfulness classes for employees. And Scott is the author of the new bestseller, Overworked and Overwhelmed, The Mindfulness Alternative. And he's going to share some information on what mindfulness is, why it's important, and how you can begin to use it. So welcome, Scott, and congratulations on the success of your new book. I have to say I love it, and I'm just delighted for this opportunity to talk with you today.
Thank you, Jesse, for the opportunity and for reading my book and loving it. I really appreciate all of that. Thank you.
Well, it's really excellent, and I'm just so glad it's out there in the world. It's such an important topic. So let's start with the basics. What exactly is mindfulness? A lot of people have different ideas about it, and could you just say a few words so that we're all talking about the same thing?
Yeah, it's a great place to start. You're right. There's a lot of different thoughts and definitions of mindfulness, and one of the things I try to do in really all of my work, but especially in this new book, is take things that maybe seem complex at first glance and try to make them as simple and as digestible as possible. So the definition of mindfulness that I'm using in Overworked and Overwhelmed is that mindfulness really equals two things. It equals awareness plus intention. And by awareness, I mean awareness of what's going on around you, you know, kind of externally or extrinsically, but also awareness of what's going on inside of you, you know, internally or intrinsically. And things like your thought process, your emotional state, your physical response or state of being. And so that's the awareness piece. And then once I'm aware of the external and the internal, I can then be more intentional about what I'm going to do, or sometimes more importantly, what I'm not going to do right now or next. So awareness plus intention is really the way I think about mindfulness.
So it's kind of like the opposite of autopilot,
which
we
all
tend to get into, right? Yeah,
we
just kind of get into our habits and our patterns, and we just kind of go through the motions without even thinking about what we're doing. And you're talking about really paying attention, it sounds like.
Yeah, tuning in, you know, tuning in to what's going on and, you know, how do I need to show up in this moment? How do I want to show up in this moment based on what's going on and, you know, maybe what I'm trying to do?
So why is that so helpful or so important? You know, it's getting, like I said, it's getting a lot of attention these days in the workplace. And I'm curious, why do you think there's so much interest now? I mean, this is not a new practice. It's been around for a long time.
What's going on?
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of big factors that are driving the interest, maybe three big factors. I think first, we've got to give a lot of credit to Jon Kabat-Zinn and Jack Kornfield and people like, you know, thought leaders like them and practitioners like them who really took a lot of these thousands of year old traditions around mindfulness and brought them to the West. And Jon Kabat-Zinn in particular, with his mindfulness-based stress reduction program that he introduced, I think, back in 1979 at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center, which is now offered, MBSR is offered in, like, 250 teaching hospitals around the world, and it's really all due to his work. So I think people in the last 30 years have become more aware of mindfulness in large part because of Jon Kabat-Zinn, but I think where the acceleration has really increased, I think, in the last 5 or 6 years, I think there's some factors going on that make people feel more overworked and overwhelmed and maybe prompt them, hopefully, to look for some alternatives. And those two big factors, I think one is the financial crisis of 2008, kicked off this dynamic that we're in now where organizations are expecting themselves and expecting their people to do more with less. The financial crisis kind of made that a matter of survival in the 2008-2009 period. But, you know, even as the economy recovers, at least in the United States it's recovering, every organization I work with, people are still in that do more with less kind of operating mode. And so, you know, that I think is driving this sense of being overworked and overwhelmed. I think the other big factor really kind of accelerated and went on steroids really in 2007, about a year before the financial crisis, and that was the introduction of the iPhone, which is kind of, you know, it's amazing to me, and I think to most people, to think the iPhone has only been around, or the smartphone as we know it today, has only been around for 7 years. And you think about the impact that's had on the world, and, you know, there's a lot of good that comes with it, but I think one of the impacts that maybe isn't so healthy is it's erased, I think, for a lot of people, any sense of boundaries that they ever had kind of have evaporated because they're available 24/7 via their smartphone, and not just with text messaging or email or telephone calls, if anybody still makes those, but just you can do anything. You know, it's a computer that you're carrying in your pocket that's masquerading as a phone, and it's made us all hyper-connected. It's accelerated the speed of decision-making to a point where maybe we just can't sustain that, and so I think there are a lot of people that are looking for a way out of this, you know, a way out of the do more with less and a way out of the hyper-connectivity and still participate in the world, but maybe not drive themselves crazy or kill themselves in the process.
Well, you named the problems really well, succinctly, you know, the do more with less and being all expected to be always on, whether you are or whether you believe it. How does mindfulness help with that?
I think, you know, you do the work in the coaching field, and I do as well. And, you know, one of my favorite jokes about coaching is how many coaches does it take to change a light bulb? Just one, but the light bulb has to really want to change.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's kind of the same thing with mindfulness in a way. I mean, I think a lot of the people I work with have reached their pain point, you know, or maybe have passed their pain point, and they really are looking for something. And so they maybe heard about mindfulness, you know, it was the cover of Time magazine a year ago, and, you know, it's pretty, you know, there's a lot of discussion about it, but I think a lot of people feel like, well, that's not for me because I don't have an hour a day to meditate, or, you know, I can't do 90 minutes of yoga every day or whatever it would be. It's for somebody else. My life is too busy for that. And I say, yeah, maybe it's not. Maybe that hour a day isn't for you, or maybe the yoga every day isn't for you. But there are things that we can learn from mindfulness that probably are for you. And I think all that hyperconnectivity and all that 24/7 and do more with less operating mode that so many of us are in leads people to be in a state of chronic fight or flight. You know, it's not the acute, oh my gosh, there's a saber-toothed tiger around the corner, fight or flight. It's that low-grade state of fight or flight that we stay in because the incoming stress is always there. And so mindfulness helps by creating an alternative to that and allowing yourself to take a break from that. And I think that's the biggest benefit of mindfulness. You know, we all heard of fight or flight. What I'm learning as I'm out talking with people about this is very few people have heard of the opposite of fight or flight in your nervous system. The opposite system is called rest and digest. That's the nickname for it. It's the sympathetic nervous system versus the parasympathetic nervous system of your autonomic nervous system. And the rest and digest response, Rick Hansen describes it as the brakes to the gas pedal of fight or flight. And just like you would never use a car or drive a car and only use the gas pedal, you really shouldn't run your body and your life with just putting your foot on the gas all the time. You need to activate your rest and digest response to counterbalance all the fight or flight that you're in. And so mindfulness can help with that because really what all the thousands of year-old traditions about mindfulness have in common, I think, is they activate rest and digest. They activate the parasympathetic nervous system. And so things like three deep breaths, the rhythmic repetitive motion of three deep breaths helps activate the rest and digest response. Going for a 10-minute walk, the rhythmic repetitive motion of that helps activate it. 10 minutes or 20 minutes of stretching, like, you know, yogic or tai chi type kind of movement and stretching can help with that. And so what I'm trying to teach people through the book and my work is simple ways, things that are easy to do and likely to make a difference, ways to activate rest and digest and give themselves a little bit of perspective and a chance to get out of fight or flight.
So, you know, one of the things as I listen to you, Scott, is that taking time out to do some of these things helps you then to kind of get refocused and actually go faster in some ways than if you're in perpetual motion.
Yeah, that's a perfect observation.
And then the other thing that occurs to me as I listen to you, and I listen to your tone of voice, and I know how busy you are, and yet you sound totally present and relaxed as we're having this conversation, is that somehow by incorporating this, you can actually be busy but not be in a hyper state.
Well, thank you for saying that. You know, kind of from a personal aspect, one of the reasons I wrote the book, there are two big reasons. One is because the clients that I was working with and the people that I meet in my work, I felt like I had to help them address what they're dealing with. And so that's one reason I wrote the new book. But the other reason is for me personally, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2009. And I had a really rough year and a half after the diagnosis. I'd been a runner and was really physically active, and I got to the point where I could barely walk around the block and kind of had to drag myself up the stairs by the banister at night to get to bed because my legs didn't work well enough to really walk up the stairs. And very long story short, my wife at the end of 2010 suggested that I go to a yoga class because a friend of hers had told her that it could help me. And I was really skeptical of that because, like, how could I even stand up, you know? Like how am I going to do yoga? And the teacher said, look, first of all, we help people like you all the time. And second of all, if you come here 3 days a week, it'll change your body. And if you come here more than 3 days a week, it'll change your life. And so I chose the second option, the more than 3 days a week option. And that was the beginning, really, of coming back from that. And the thing, when you have MS, you have to manage your stress, because if you don't, your body lets you know immediately that you're not operating well. You know, I feel it in my body when I'm stressed. And somebody asked me like a month or so ago, do you ever get overworked and overwhelmed? I said, well, yeah, like all the time. You know, it happens all the time. But the difference is I recognize it early now because my body tells me. And a lot from my own mindfulness practice, starting with the yoga, but also other things that I do, like breathing and meditation and eating well and things like that, I know what to do about it. You know, I know what to do when I feel overworked and overwhelmed, and it's not really complicated stuff. Yoga is kind of my thing now since I don't run, but doesn't have to be your thing. It could just be anything that helps you activate your parasympathetic nervous system and kind of keep, you know, the scientists call it homeostasis, you know, keeping yourself in balance between fight or flight and rest and digest.
Well, that's such a powerful story, Scott, and it certainly you're somebody who's not just talking about something, but somebody who's talking about what they actually are living and practicing clearly. And it's quite a testament to the difference it's made for you. And I'm glad to hear that you're doing so well.
I feel really grateful for it, you know. But I guess what I'm very grateful that it's come back the way it has. But I'm really grateful for, like, that yoga teacher said, come here more than 3 days a week. because, you know, I've had a lot of great mentors over the last 3 or 4 years that have really helped me.
Well, people open doors, but then you're the one who chooses to go through it. What I love about your book is that you've opened some doors for people that are really busy, that maybe they're not going to go to yoga 5 times a week, but there's some wonderful practices in there that run the whole gamut, like you said, just stopping and taking some deep breaths every once in a while. And one of the things that it reminds me is that just stopping and doing that forces you to pay attention, which is one of your two conditions for mindfulness.
Right, totally.
Well, I'm aware of the time and wanting to keep this short, and there's so much that we could be talking about, and your book is so rich. If people wanted to learn more about your book, I guess I've got two questions. One is, who would want to read this? Who did you write it for? What will they get from reading it? Could you just say a few words about that?
Sure. So the primary audience that I had in mind was the professional person who feels overworked and overwhelmed, you know, and so you could be in a leadership role or not in a leadership role in an organization, and I think this book is for you if you're feeling overworked and overwhelmed. What I'm learning as I go out and talk with people about it, is other people are reading it too. And
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when you say if it's for somebody who's overworked and overwhelmed, I'm going, well, that's about everybody, isn't it?
That's about everybody, yeah. I mean, I got this great email the other day from a guy I used to coach years ago. He's 70 years old and retired now, and he says, so my life is really wonderful. You know, I'm doing some teaching and this and that and the other thing, but I still get overworked and overwhelmed, so I just want you to know it's for 70-year-old retired people too, you know?
There you go.
And so that was really cool. So I think what I'm really trying to help people with and is in terms of what they're going to get out of it is simple, practical things that you can do right now. Again, easy to do, likely to make a difference, that are going to help you feel less overworked and overwhelmed. Because in the end, really, overworked and overwhelmed is just a feeling, you know? There's not some tangible thing out there that is overworked and overwhelmed. It's your response to what's going on around you, right? And so if we can condition our response, then we can deal with it in a much healthier and more productive way. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Well, that sounds great. And if somebody wanted to get your book, I know it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookstores.
Barnes & Noble, yeah, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, 800 CEO Read, wherever fine books are sold online and occasionally in person at places like Barnes & Noble. Yeah.
Great. Well, Scott, thank you so much for your time today and for a fascinating conversation.
Jesse, thank you. I really enjoyed talking with you. I really so appreciate it. Thank you.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. This was a conversation with Scott Eblen, author of Overworked and Overwhelmed, The Mindfulness Alternative.